and welcome. Good morning to another edition of Quest Community Vibration. Without any further ado, wake up. Music, like poetry, has a message, and history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. Words have meaning that we can comprehend, like definition. News can create a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now, we ask you to pull back the curtain and see the contribution, and you will find our quest moment where we attempt to make waves, vibrations. Thank you once again for joining us here to hear a different perspective of our diaspora. While we are all in the midst of a pandemic and people are just stressed out simply because of the fact that, you know, they don't know what to do, we're here to say stay safe and be strong. And here's a song that pretty much says, Cancel 2020. Can I get a 15 put together just last month by DJ Jazzy Jeff? Check it out.
COVID gon' still be here. Top sign still up in my rear. Baby mama got the news, now she all on her knees. Cause I didn't stop when they said freeze. I must admit, I thought this year be a blast. Every night I will be raising the glass. On
straight, making a stash. But instead, I'm watching his face and sad. Little kid raised his rifle to blast. Killed two people and the cops let him pass. It wasn't that kind of to me. That wasn't even his fear. Yeah, the past year's been whack. Hunting season on everything black. Speaking of black, just lost black hands of the king. Somebody please take 20 back.
Mr. Harris, good morning. You are our music director. Please, quickly, in 5 seconds, tell us about this song, Cancel 2020.
All right, good morning. Cancel 2020, from my perspective, is a lot of things have been canceled this year, especially for artists. They can't do live shows anymore. A lot of people can't go out to restaurants without having to sit five tables away from somebody. And since we're canceling stuff, he's like, who is this guy, Eric Robinson, he's like, well, let's just cancel this whole year then. And we can start over in 21. You know, he talks about a lot of stuff. And this has been an exceptional year, positively and negatively. You know, that's how I see it. And I agree. We need to just cancel 2020.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, we're in the midst of it, and it's almost over. And without any further ado, it is time for us to proceed forward with our student host, Mr. Walter Pierce. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibration. Quest Youth Radio is the best youth radio.
Youth radio,
and
yeah.
For today's show, I want to start off with a diamond. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. Now, for my diamond for today, starting it off, her name, she's an author, and her name is Toni Morrison. Morrison grew up in the American Midwest in a family that possessed an intense love of and appreciation for black culture. Storytelling, songs, and folktales were a deeply formative part of her childhood. She attended Howard University and Cornell University. After teaching at Texas Southern University for 2 years, She taught at Howard University from 1957 to 1964. In 1965, Morrison became a fiction editor at Random House, where she worked for a number of years. In 1984, she began teaching writing at the State University of New York at Albany, which she left in 1989 to join the faculty of Princeton University. She retired in 2006. Morrison's first book, The Bluest Eye, is a novel of initiation concerning a victimized adolescent black girl who was obsessed by white standards of beauty and longs to have blue eyes. In her second novel, Sula, published, it examines the dynamics of friendship and the expectations of conformity within the community. Song of Solomon is told by a male narrator in search of his identity. Its publication brought Morrison to national attention. Tar Baby, in 1981, set on a Caribbean island, explores conflicts of race, class, and sex. The critically acclaimed Beloved, which won a Pulitzer Prize for fiction, is based on the true story of a runaway slave at the point of recapture, kills her infant daughter in order to spare her life of slavery. A film adaptation of the novel was released in 1998, starring Oprah Winfrey. In addition, Morrison wrote the libretto for Margaret Gardner, an opera about the same story that inspired Beloved. Toni Morrison wrote even more novels and even more books dealing with the same topic. But another one of her probably most well-known and best pieces was called Remembered, and it chronicled the hardships of black students during the integration of American public school system aimed at children, and it used its archival photographs juxtaposed with captions speculating on the thoughts of their subjects. For that work, Morrison won the Coretta Scott King Award in 2005. The central theme of Morrison's novels is in the Black American experience. In an unjust society, her characters struggle to find themselves in the cultural identity. Her use of fantasy, her sinuous poetic style, and the rich interweaving of the mythic gave her stories great strength and texture. In 2010, Morrison was made an officer of the French Legion of Honor. 2 years later, she was awarded the U.S. Presidential Medal of Freedom. Toni Morrison, The Pieces I Am, in 2019, is a documentary about her life and career. And that concludes my piece on Toni Morrison. And before I open up the questions, I just want to talk a little bit and just summarize everything I just talked about. So, you know, of course, Toni Morrison grew up loving writing, and she had so much for a love of writing. She was able to connect all the experiences that different black Americans had in America. And that was really what her writing was. And it was so good because she was able to provide so many different perspectives and so many different situations and examples of what a black American could go through. During that time period, she wanted everybody to get involved and to actually understand what she was talking about and understand the message. So she would not shy away from using different types of words, different types of phrases. She will use those deep phrases and those actual words that would probably be used back then. Even though it might be explicit or anything, it would still be used in her text, because she actually wanted people to not get a different interpretation or to not get the full understanding. Because if you sometimes dumb it down for some people, they won't get the full understanding, and they won't fully go through with their interpretation. So that's why she wanted to always provide the full black experience in her novels, and she wanted everybody to understand how it was like for one. And yeah, that's what I have to say.
Okay, we're going to transition over to Tanisha. And Tanisha, good morning, first of all. And what do you think about Toni Morrison and Walter's interpretation and delivery of the segment.
Good morning, everyone. It was a good interpretation. However, I didn't really read Toni Morrison's books. However, I guess from what he just explained, it definitely penetrates right now to this day the image of African-American women, black women in general, and how they depict us and how society emulates us, especially with all this plastic surgery, with breast implants, butt implants. And it just make you think how much everybody hate us, but then everybody wants to be us. So it makes me want to, you know, definitely, you know, study more about her as an author and the impact of, you know, how it has on society as well.
That being said, without any further ado, we're going to go to our next panelist, Mr. Shelton Harris, and your first segment. Good morning once again.
Good morning to everyone. Chains of events, as we view it, is an interpretation of news as it affects our community from the alloys of North. It's a report on the events in politics, education, law, business, religion, and science. It reveals an interpretation of one event to another so that the listener will know what's happening. Today, our chains are going to link music, politics, and business. We're a winner. From his first few bars, it's filled with funky drums and a percolating guitar line and a glorious noise of people laughing and enjoying themselves. It was written by Curtis Mayfield and performed by his group, The Impressions, and it unfolded like a soundtrack to the coolest party in town. But the song's lyrics and direct message about black pride was rarely heard on the radio in 1967 and was serious as death and taxes. The song came at a crazy time in our country. Tension over civil rights protests had brought riots to many cities, including Chicago, where Mayfield and The Impressions were based. In 1968, Martin Luther King Jr. would be killed by an assassin's bullet, and the despair over the state of black people in America would deepen even more. I didn't know it then, but before We're a Winner, there weren't many hit songs encouraging black people to be proud of themselves. That is what led to this song being banned in many radio stations across the country. Mayfield wrote an anthem that reached into the soul of black America, assuring folks that no matter how tough the struggle against segregation and racism became, it was worth the fight. As we listen to the song, we will be transformed from another time that is still familiar today. Enjoy.
Curtis Mayfield had his finger on the pulse of society. Even when we as a people did not know where we were going, Curtis musically led the way. One of my favorite parts in one of his songs said,
"People must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me."
Okay, Mr. Harris, talk to me about how I played the wrong song.
Now, well, it really leads us into what we were going to be talking about next in Curtis, because Curtis Mayfield was very instrumental in writing songs that, even though they had a little rhythm and beat to it, there was always an underlying message in almost everything he wrote. And this particular song, Choice of Colors, was just showing how the miseducation in our education system was just teaching people how to love and appreciate things outside of your culture instead of loving yourself. So who really told you to do that stuff? So that's what Choice of Colors was for. It was
okay. Finish your thought.
No, I was just saying that was going to be my lead in for my next segment.
Well, go with it.
All right, the next segment is talking about curtains, which is an exposure and analysis of artists and their work behind the curtain and the stage. Then recording artists and companies have grown rich from support of the community, but what benefits have the community gained from the artists? Today, we'll pull back the curtain on a very underrated brother who has embedded himself in music and political fabric of civil and human rights in this country and our diaspora his whole life. His name is Curtis Mayfield. He was a singer, writer, guitarist, producer, and entrepreneur who was one of the first principal architects in the Chicago-based soul music during the 70s and the 60s. Beginning with some of his early songs, such as Gypsy Woman, It's All Right, Keep On Pushing, and People Get Ready, when he was the lead vocalist for The Impressions, Mayfield wrote highly inspirational, humanistic pieces concerned with African-American uplift. His compositions made standards in the repertoires of artists so as varied as Ron Stewart, Bob Marley, and Brian Holland. He was born in June in 1942 in Chicago, Illinois, and he entered the music business in 1957 at 15, when he became a vocalist and guitarist for The Impressions, whose other members were Jerry Butler, Sam Gooden, and the brothers Richard and Arthur Brooks. Butler left the group in 1958 and was replaced by Fred Cash. The Brooks brothers left in 1962, and with the group being reduced to a trio, Mayfield, along with Gooden and Cash, devised a much-imitated vocal style, a pronounced three-part alternating lead, which allowed Mayfield's delicate high tenor to be enhanced by Gooden's bass and Cash's low tenor, derived from gospel music, which switched off the techniques for each vocalist to take a turn with the lead part, while the others provided background harmony. This was later adopted by groups such as Sly and the Family Stone and Earth, Wind & Fire. A remarkably innovative guitarist, self-taught, Mayfield tuned his instrument into a natural chord to achieve subtle lyrical sound. Many of the guitarists in Chicago imitated playing his style, and it showed up in the numerous soul records made in his hometown. Mayfield was also a major contributor to the songs of other performers, most of them from Chicago. Among those recording his compositions were Jan Bradley, Jerry Butler, Gene Chandler, Aretha Franklin, Walter Jackson, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Major Lance, the Staple Singers, the list goes on and on. In the late 60s, he wrote such songs as We're a Winner, which we'll hear a little later, and Choice of Colors, recorded by the Impressions. Mayfield played a crucial role in transforming black popular music into a voice for social concerns during the struggle in the civil rights period. In 1961, he was one of the first African Americans to found his own music publishing company. 6 years later, he established a highly successful Curtain Records, which became a leading producer of soundtrack albums for black-orientated films, for which Mayfield and such artists as Gene Chandler, Major Lance, and the Five Stair Sets recorded. Mayfield left the Impressions in 1970 to work on a solo career and subsequently became a major force in the development of funk, with such song as Don't Worry, If There's Blank the Low, We're All Gonna Go, Beautiful Brother of Mine, and We People Who Are Darker Than Blue. Although he achieved considerable recognition with such albums as Curtis and Curtis Live, it was through his recordings of soundtracks for motion pictures that made Mayfield achieve his biggest successes, particularly with Superfly in 1972. He also penned soundtracks for Claudine, Let's Do It Again, A Piece of the Action, and Sparkle. He also wrote the song Amen for the movie Lilies of the Field, which Sidney Poitier won his first Oscar. He struggled during the subsequent disco era, like a lot of R&B artists did. And in the 80s, he was no longer a factor in the rhythm and blues or pop charts. Tragically, he was paralyzed in 1990 from a freak accident during a concert in Brooklyn. He received the Grammy Award for Lifetime Achievement in 1995. He was inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of the Depressions and as a solo artist. His contributions to the furtherance of the struggle of self-determination is still relevant in the minds of those who struggle every day for our freedom. The next song shows the detrimental effects of miseducation as it's targeted to our youth. We heard it earlier. It's called Choice of Colors. Maybe we can hear the We're a Winner song right now. Please enjoy.
Okay, well, we're going to hear.
Throw away your troubles, leave your blues behind.
Enjoy.
Throw away your troubles, leave your blues behind. 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 Freedom from strangers and apologizing time. Throw away your troubles, leave your blues behind. Everybody together in a universal mind. Throw away your troubles, leave your blues behind.
About how I've actually messed up the music selection that you prepared for us ahead of time. who is Joyous? Who produced that particular song?
Well, this particular song, Joyous, was played by a group called Real People. And it was a cover of the song Joyous, played by the group called Pleasure. Came out in the late 70s, early 80s. As more of a jazz flavor, real people just kicked it up with a Afolande type mix. But
okay.
It's everything.
Okay, so I just want to say to the audience, thank you for being so patient, and you know, being patient with us, and particularly myself, and as we move along to our next segment, which is going to feature another segment by our student host, Walter Pierce. I like to say he's about to drop a bomb on us. Misnomer, disparity, anthropology, and geography. I want you to take a listen to Walter Pierce as he dispels, you know, things that we thought are really not. Walter, take it away.
Yes, and to start back with my second diamond of the day, we have another author, you could say, but he's also a political activist as well, and his name is Cheick Alcindia. And see, distinguished historian and Pan-African top political leader, Cheick Alcindia was born in Senegal on December 22nd, 1933, to a Muslim family. Part of the peasant class, his family belonged to the African Islamic section. Diop grew up in the French colonial schools. Upon completing his bachelor's degree in Senegal, Diop moved to Paris, where he began his graduate studies at Sorbonne in 1946 in physics. Once at the Sorbonne, however, he became involved in the African student anti-colonial movement, where young intellectuals worked for African independence. He helped organize the first Pan-African Student Congress in Paris in 1951, and in 1956, participated in the first World Congress of Black Writers and Artists in Paris. These movements laid the groundwork for a growing African liberation sentiment, supported by the ideological arguments of Pan-Africanism. Committed to the richness of African history, Diop's 1951 PhD dissertation looked into the ancient Egyptian history and the influence it had on European culture. At a time when European culture superiority was the accepted notion, Diop proclaimed that African civilizations were the inspiration and origin of European accomplishments. The Sorbonne rejected his dissertation, yet his work nevertheless received worldwide attention. In 1955, his work was published as Nations, Negress et Culture, or in English, Negro Nations and Culture, a publication that will make him one of the most widely known and controversial historians of his era, partly due to the response of the book. In 1960, Diop was awarded his doctorate by the Sorbonne. That same year, Senegal gained its independence and Diop returned to his home country. In Senegal, Diop was appointed to a research fellow at IFAN at Dakar University, where he set up a radiocarbon laboratory. In 1961 to 1963, he created political opposition parties. These parties opposed the French policies of President Leopold Senghor's government. In response to the dissolution of these parties, Diop founded the Rassemblement National Democrat, RND, in 1976. The RND published the Wolof Language Journal, Sigi, which Diop was the editor. As a renowned scholar and political activist, Diop was appointed Professor of Ancient History at Dakar University in 1980. Over his career, Diop published a number of books, including 7, which were translated into English. His most famous works were The African Origin of Civilization, Myth or Reality in 1974, The Cultural Unity of Black Africa in 1978, and Towards the African Renaissance, Essays in African Culture and Development in 1946 to 1960 and 1978. Diop received the highest award for scientific research from the Institute Cultural African in 1982. As a testament to his global effect, Diop was invited to Atlanta, Georgia in 1985, where Mayor Andrew Young proclaimed April 4th, Dr. Chet Anti-Diop Day. The many books Diop published in French were all dedicated to African empowerment and the reconstruction of a colonially fragmented identity. Diop had 2 sons with his wife, Louise Marie Diop Mess. On February 1st, 1986, Diop Anti-Diop died in Dakar at the age of 63. And that concludes my piece on Chet Anti-Diop. And, you know, the reason this is so prominent is because it's unique the way he went about fighting oppression, you know. He went for a PhD. That's where it really started. And, you know, he always been a guy who was always in the studies of stuff like physics and political science and all that. He was always that's what he started off doing. And when he went for his PhD, he had to do a dissertation. And his dissertation was just something that a lot of people just didn't want to hear, as you can see. It was really dealt with ignorance of why they didn't decline, why they declined his, because he was attacking the point about Egypt, Egyptian history, and how it had an influence on European culture, you know. And the thing was, of course, and probably is still now, that the at the time, European culture was superiority at the time. It was superior to others. And he was arguing the fact that everything that European culture was, it was actually all originated and came from Africa, and mainly Egypt. And that was what he was trying to argue. But, of course, a lot of people weren't trying to hear that because, of course, ignorance, and they didn't want to believe that us Africans were the ones who actually is where they get their actual influence on culture from. You know, so it was declined, but it was able to still get around and still become a worldwide attention, which a lot of people agreed and disagreed with him on those type of topics, you know. But that didn't stop him from continuing his fight, because he was also somebody who was fighting political oppression as well back at his home country. You know, he started up 2 political parties to fight against one of the pro-French policies, which was the president at the time. They wanted to fight against him, so they created political parties, and they provided these things that they wanted bettered. And you know, as he continued, he was able to start writing books, you know, writing books about all of his work and everything that he did as a study, and he was able to prove. And this really what made him cemented in history. He started to get invited to things all around the world. Even Mayor Andrew Young invited him to Georgia, Atlanta, and they even have a day on April 4th, which is named after him, to honor him. So, you know, just a lot of information, a lot of things he was able to accomplish throughout his short lifetime. Of course, he died at 63, but throughout his short lifetime, he was able to accomplish and really change a lot of people's perspectives and really hit them hard, because what he was fighting was something that a lot of people wasn't used to and they were continually ignoring. So he wanted that ignoring and ignorance to stop. So thank you.
Okay, so I know that 6778 has a question for you pertaining to your particular diamond that you just completed. Cal.
Yes. Good afternoon. Good morning, everyone. I guess my question, actually, first of all, great show, guys. But my question is that your determination to Mr. Diop and his philosophy or his research based on the principles that, you know, cultural historically came out of Egypt, where a lot of people that I guess currently that when they look at Egypt, they don't look at it as a cultural beginning, especially when it comes to Africa, which we know that Egypt is located. How much did you determine based on your research where you thought that or you understood that the center of cultural beginnings started in Egypt, which is centralized in Africa? And that's a question for Mr. Walter Pierce.
Thank you, man. You know, it really started kind of when I had to get to understand where Egypt was actually located, because I believe, I don't know about others, but when I was younger especially, I used to think that Egypt was basically a part of Europe because of everything, because of what Egyptians were portrayed and looked like. They looked like they were European. And I even had a friend who was Egyptian, you know, and he looked very European. He was like, but he explained to us that it's actually in Africa, and all the culture and all that stuff is really just what Europeans just took upon them and called it their own, you know. So as reading this, it started just to submit my understanding about the topic, because I was able to connect all of that with also other African countries that also play a big role into European culture and what they present on themselves, because of course they before 400 years ago, even 600 years ago, they came to Africa and took over and took a lot of things with them, and they took control of a lot of the area. So they was able to gain a lot of the knowledge and about our people and about our culture and a lot of stuff, and they took it upon themselves to call it their own. So really, that's just like that. That's really how I just was able to connect all of these, because of the different pieces of information with Sheikh Anti Diop was talking about, and also my own understanding of it.
Okay. Mr. Harris, talk about misnomers and a stolen legacy as it pertains to Diop.
Yeah, what Brother Diop was trying to do was just, like Walter said, show that the European mindset, the whole idea of European civilization, was something that was like a stolen legacy of Egyptian naturality. You know, so because the whole idea of like civilization, the word civilization, you know, when Europeans, when the Greeks and Alexander and all them were coming into Africa initially, they didn't come through being civil. They came through as conquerors, and they stole whatever they wanted. You know, there was a misnomer that we had, they burnt down the library in Alexandria. They didn't burn it down. They took all of that information, took it back to Greece, translated it into Greek, and then started putting Greek names on the stuff. So, and then whatever was left, they burnt down. But all of the major knowledge and stuff of understandings of science and mathematics and astrology, all of those things were African mindsets that were really old by the time they came down to Egypt to get it. Because Egypt was really one of the younger civilizations of the African diaspora. You know, it, civilization worked its way down the Nile to Egypt, and it just happened and it settled there. But if you start moving back towards the Nile, towards Central Africa, there's more pyramids in Sudan than there is in Egypt. But we don't take all that stuff into consideration because we were always taught that we were not as good as other people when really we were the epitome of civilization for thousands of years.
Okay. That being said, I'm going to play a song called Boomerang, because when you do things like that, it does have a way of coming right back around so that we can dispel the disparity and have the truth come out. Definition. This segment provides the listener with words and their meaning.
so that we can achieve together a common basis to say that we care and believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definition controls us. We must define our existence and not have it defined for us. And it is my pleasure to reintroduce Walter Pierce with his segment of Definition.
Yes, and welcome back, everybody. And my definition for today is interpretation. And interpretation is a noun, and it's the action of explaining the meaning of something. Something like that. You know,
okay, so for some reason we lost Walter's connection, and so we're going to move right along and come right back to him in just a second. But I'm going to come to Tanisha Gardner. How have you enjoyed the show so far?
Yeah, the show is very insightful and impactful. Very good.
Okay. All right. And that pretty much allows us enough time to get Walter back in here. Walter. As you were saying, pick up where you left off.
Yeah, so interpretation, of course, is the act of explaining the meaning of something. And it's a noun as well. And the reason why this word is so important for especially today's show is because we both have people who were writers and people who wrote about things that had a very deep meaning. So, of course, when they talked about something and somebody read it, their purpose was so that the person reading it could get an interpretation and interpret the information to others correctly. You know, starting off with Toni Morrison, you know, her thing with writing was everything really about the Black experience. She had so many different books about so many different experiences of a Black person. Examples like one who's impoverished, one who's being objectified, one who wants to change their stance on. It's things like that. You know, and she doesn't shy away from the types of words that she uses because she wants people to actually understand how it was like back then. So, of course, when people read it, she wanted people to be able to interpret that information to others so that they could get an understanding of a Black American experience during that time period if they didn't already know about it. So of all races, including our own race, if we really didn't understand our history, and we read one of Toni Morrison's books, most likely we will get to understand what some of the experiences were like. You know, that's the example for Toni Morrison. And then if you go to check Aunty Dia, you know, one of his biggest pieces that really blew him up in the world was talking about when he was talking about European culture and how that culture originates from Africa and how people really didn't want to hear that. You know, people, they declined the dissertation, even though the reason they probably declined it is because they probably don't want to know that, which is a problem for a lot of people with information. If they don't want to know it, then they don't know it. And that's how ignorance starts. So, you know, that's why he brought out all these different books explaining his theories and ideas on topics. So when people read it, they was actually starting to understand what he was talking about and start to actually accept him more and respect his ideas and ideologies. And that's really what was Chang Ata Diop's purpose. So again, just interpretation, being able to read things and tell others about it, about what the author actually wants you to tell them about, is something that really what the meaning of interpretation is. Thank you.
Okay. And so, Tanisha Gardner, thank you again. But talk to us about inspiration and kind of put the show in perspective and for all of us and particularly our listening audience.
So when you think about the word inspiration, inspiration means to inspire. And it also talks about something that makes someone want to do something or basically it's a great idea. So everything that everyone talked about is how do we inspire each other to be great and create change and what motivates us to create that change. And that's what we need to do, because that's what all of them have done through the music, through the political aspects, and through the books. Is they seen a problem, and within that problem, they created a solution, and within that solution, that's how they was be able to use their creativity to be able to expound and expound on, and also help the world.
Okay, let's get a caller from North Carolina on the line. Do you have a question or a comment to today's show? One 421 on the line. Would you like to introduce yourself? Okay. So we'll get Calvin. Any questions or comments as far as the show so far?
So far, so good. It's great commentary. It's very informative today. You guys always do a great job. Good luck to you guys. Have a blessed day.
Thank you. Mr. Harris, we're bringing you back in with 60 seconds on the clock. Talk to us.
So today, there was a major theme, like Walter and Tanisha were saying, and the major theme today was that we need to stop looking to others for our own greatness and create it for ourselves. And that was the same Toni Morrison did. That was the same thing Chikata Diop did. And that's the same thing Curtis Mayfield did. You know, they stepped out of the common to the uncommon. And then that's where they found their individual greatness.
Okay. We have 7035 on the line. Question and comment. Please start out by introducing yourself.
Good morning. It's Valerie. And I'm just feeding off of the word inspiring or inspiration that you were speaking of. And this show always inspires me, and I'm always learning something new each week.
Okay. That being said, Mr. Walter Pierce, close us out.
I just want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. You know, we're on here every Saturday at 10 a.m. in the morning, so make sure you come to tune in. And it was a very great show today, and I hope everybody learned something. So, again, Quest Youth Radio is the best.
The best youth radio. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And, yes, we did make vibrations and waves today. And you had an opportunity to hear a different perspective from our diaspora. Produced by Quest Youth Radio, our student host, Walter Pierce, Shelton Harris, Tanisha Gardner, and our special guests on the line who were remain nameless, but we all know who they are, our number one fans. Thank you very much again for tuning in to Quest Community Vibrations.